I get buckets.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of the Blue Wire Buckets Podcast. I am Dan Favalli, co-host of the Hardwood Knox Podcast. I am joined tonight by Jason Pat. He is the co-host of the Cash Considerations Podcast. And we, together, are joined by Mason Ginsburg, who is the co-host of the In the Know Podcast. We've got a lot to talk about tonight. We got two Game 7s coming up. But first, we have to start with KD's injury. Has what was deemed a calf strain, I believe, and is going to be missing Game 6 between the Rockets and Warriors on Friday night. I guess first, because I'm rude, how are you guys doing tonight? I'm just rambling on and on and on.
Doing great. A couple, I guess, the Sixers. I feel like the Sixers-Raptors has been weird. And then Nuggets-Blazers was a fun game. But yeah, besides that, just a whole night of basketball and ready to chop it up.
Yeah, I gotta say, I started. I'm old, man. These are late nights tough in Central Time, and the only thing
it is
the only thing keeping me alive were the Dame shots from 35 feet out. Those have brought me back into it. Like holy crap, man! Those shots just unreal. And
this is the second time I've done the Blue Wire Buckets, and my first one was after Dame hit the game winner against the Thunder to end that series. I feel like me doing these Blue Wire Buckets pods is good luck for Damian Lillard.
I am going to say that I resent every single person who lives in Mountain Time and Pacific Time. As just an East Coaster, just every single night watching basketball, I resent every single one of them.
It's tough. It is very tough. We're in Central Time, and that's hard enough, but East Coast is brutal.
KD, though, not going to be available for Game 6, so I think that basically guarantees a Warriors victory. But seriously, Jason, what is it? Do you see this impacting? It sounds like he's going to be back for the Western Conference Finals. So do you think, if we're just assuming that he's going to be out for the rest of this series, do you think the Warriors can get or will get one of two without him?
I guess I'll still lean towards yes. I guess Steph is going to have to step up big, and he was huge down the stretch after just being absolutely terrible. I mean, he's obviously been slumping for a while now, and then the start, the last game, and the Warriors were dominating, but Steph was terrible again. He was just missing layup after layup. Like, I saw some report, I think it was from Sam Amick, talking about like his fingers bothering more than normal. But then he stepped up big down the stretch with KD out, and obviously the big thing is people have been talking about is with Durant not there, will we see the Warriors of 2015, 2016 come back? And obviously they don't have as much depth as they used to. All these guys have had a few more years of deep playoff runs in them, but I would guess the Rockets will win tomorrow. But back at Oracle for a Game 7, I still kind of like the Warriors to win that game, even without KD. I feel like Steph or Clay, they still got Draymond, Iggy. Maybe the Loon Dog will come up big again. I still think that we're going to get at least one explosion out of Steph in these next two games, and that'll help the Warriors get over the top.
I've got Warriors in 6.
Ooh.
I don't know. I just think I think they're gonna catch the Rockets by surprise here. And I feel like I've seen Clay Steph struggle more than I'm used to seeing them shooting the basketball this series. And I think it's just gonna be kind of funny. And it might all break right for him in one game. And I think it could be I don't know. I just got this weird feeling that Golden State's gonna come out and win this game potentially big. And Rockets Twitter and all Rockets fan bases just knows it. And that might be a little bit funny, I think.
They do. I saw the stat where they're like, when Steph plays and KD doesn't the last couple of years, the Warriors are 20, I think it was 29-4 or something crazy like that. So it's not like they haven't had plenty of success playing with Steph and no KD there. And yeah, I mean, I feel like they'll probably try to revert back to more of the Steph style where he's just got the ball all the time and he's running the show. And like you said, if he goes wild and the Rockets, you mentioned the Rockets, just kind of, it'd be funny if they lost. I feel like them losing this last game was just absolutely horrible. And I could definitely see them melting down again. We saw it last year, that 27 straight threes. If they really can't win this series now with KD out, and Steph not playing at his best, they just need to pack it up and their window might be shut soon.
Well, it doesn't bode well for them that Steph went mini bonkers in the fourth quarter of that game. It's like, what if he's just back now because Kevin Durant's not there?
Yeah, I mean, it might be. I mean, we've seen KD and the Warriors' offense, like, as good as they've been, as much talent as they have, like, the more iso-centric offense with KD doing a lot of the scoring, like, and Steph is out of his rhythm. I don't know what that has as much to do with him blowing all the layups that he's been missing this series. But, yeah, I mean, if he just is dominating the ball and he gets into one of those grooves, like, he could just go off for 40-some points and maybe the Warriors do win tomorrow night. It certainly would not surprise me. Like, while I think the Rockets will win tomorrow, like, it would not surprise me if we get a vintage Steph game. And I feel like one of the talk – I've a lot of talk on Twitter is, like, Steph hasn't had many, like, iconic playoff moments and stuff like that. I feel like he's got a chance to do it right now. So, like, it would not surprise me if we saw something like that out of him.
Yeah, and I just think, I don't know, I was looking at the point spreads for the games coming up. And
it's huge.
It's the last I saw was Golden State +7. And I feel like that hasn't happened in a long time.
Wow.
And that to me is reason enough to just take the Warriors.
Well, I guess the one point, though, or not the one, but like Jason said, I guess the depth thing could be an issue because when you look back to 2015, 2016, you know, Sean Livingston is not that player right now. And so he's been awful, and who do you rely on outside of your top five guys right now? It's hard to pinpoint, but I picked the Warriors in five, so I'm just inclined to go with a Warriors victory in six because I feel like it makes my pick look less ridiculous.
Yeah, Mo Spates ain't walking through that door, unfortunately, but yeah, I'll go with Warriors in seven. I'll say the Rockets will get one more big like Harden performance, and they won't totally piss down their leg, but I think the Warriors will still end up winning this series.
It'd be really funny if instead of like Clay or Steph just going off, Draymond hits like six.
He goes game seven when Cavs, he hits like 35 points.
Yeah, they just win in the dumbest way possible.
Does Twitter melt down if the Warriors lose? I still feel like as much as people want to talk about how the Warriors are more vulnerable than they've been in years past, there's still, at least to me, this sense of inevitability with them. But if they actually, if they drop two games in a row after going up 3-2 and holding on to the lead after Kevin Durant went down in game five, Twitter just breaks, right?
I'm sure people will, yeah. Oh, God. I don't know. That'd be funny. I feel like people would, especially like if Steph is bad, like I feel like people have been waiting to just like shit all over Steph because he's like the golden boy. And if they do blow it and he's bad and chokes, I guess, I feel like people will go crazy. And I feel like it probably would, like you say KD stays, like I feel like he won't. I've said for a while now, I feel like even if they win it this year and what, no, even if KD did stay, like I feel like the dynasty is basically done after this season. So if they did lose now, like I feel like I don't think that this core would win another title. Like KD probably would leave. And I mean, Steph, Clay, and Dre are all the miles on them. And I know they'll probably still be around for a few more years, I guess, in their prime. But like, I feel like just all these runs, like this would, that would basically be it. So I feel like that would be, it would probably go nuts on Twitter afterwards.
I think KD's gone either way, but I think the way that dynamic has been working recently, I feel like that'd be just like the perfect scenario where KD finally feels like he's valued the way he wants to be valued. If they lose these last two games without him after being up 3-2, like, oh yeah, wait, maybe I will stick around then. But no, regardless, he's probably,
I don't
gone.
Think so.
We do have two game sevens though set. The Sixers came back in game six tonight, and the score 112-101 was just not reflective of what we saw. The Raptors were just destroyed for most of the game. I've been impressed because I picked, this is another bad pick, Raptors in five. I've been really impressed with the way that Philly's kind of stayed together when it looks like the Raptors have had those FU moments and come back. I thought the series was over when it was 2-1 or whatever it was, and then for them to lose game five and come back in game six and put forth this when they're just so inconsistent from a day-to-day basis or game-to-game basis. So who, Mason, who would you pick for game seven in this scenario? I know the easier pick is Toronto because they're home, but is there like a, with the way that Philly's come back in some of these big moments, do you lean towards them at all?
Yeah, I mean, it's probably Toronto, but I mean, I'm going to pat myself on the back here because my first blue, this is my second Blue Wire Buckets podcast too. And the first one was just me and Justin. And I remember we were talking about, it was leading up to the second round. We were talking about what's the series that is going to be the toughest outside of, I think we were, I can't remember if there was one caveat we had in there, but like, what's the, besides Denver, Portland, because we know that game, that series is going to be back and forth. Like, what's that, what other series is the best chance to really be a hard fought, tough battle? And I mean, obviously now we're getting potentially three game sevens, but I was pushing Philly and Toronto, and he went back on me saying he thought that was going to be kind of like what you said, that it'd be Toronto in five. And he actually made me kind of think twice about what I was saying, and he made some good points about Toronto. But I mean, credit to Philly. They've, like you said, they've taken some punches after going up early in the series. And I still think Toronto inevitably wins in seven. I think Kawhi is just on another level right now. But I mean, Embiid didn't have the best game tonight. He's had a little bit of a tough time against Gasol. I feel like it's on him to really step up and take the lead if they're going to win this series and really just be the guy for them. I don't know. That's kind of my X factor if he can do that. But I really think I still think Toronto's the team that wins it.
I do agree with you. I like I said at the start of this, like, this series has just been like kind of hard to figure out. Like, there've been a bunch of blowouts, just back and forth like this. Because, like, after last game, game five, the Raptors just absolutely murdered the Sixers, and everyone's like, all right, that's it. Raptors, gonna finish this off in six. I had Raptors in six, so I was feeling pretty good about myself. I did not expect the Sixers to come out and really dominate this game like they did. And you mentioned Embiid, like, he didn't play the greatest today, but he was plus 40, like, absolutely ridiculous plus minus. I mean, it was so funny because, like, Brett Brown tried Boban a few times and it was just an absolute disaster. And then they had to get Embiid back out there. And just his presence, even though his offense has been kind of a mess, like you mentioned, Marc Gasol's done a really nice job on him as he has done historically. Embiid's just defensive presence was great. And I do also have to give a shout out, my guy, Jimmy Buckets, former Bull, was absolutely awesome in the first half. He kind of, at the end of the first half, I think he had like three baskets like in the last like minute or two, kind of just opened up the lead for the Sixers, gave them much momentum heading into halftime. He just really solid all overall game. He's been really good all series. And then I guess another X factor, I think it's just Ben Simmons and like his whole mentality. Like, I feel like from game to game, just his like energy level or aggressiveness has just kind of wavered. Like, the Sixers are just so much better when he's flying the basket and he's just dribbling and going to the basket and getting good looks at the rim. Like, he's really hard to stop. He's a 6'9", 6'10", super athletic, super fast freak. But sometimes he just kind of fades into the background and is, like, invisible. But, like, tonight he was super aggressive right from the start. And I guess the Sixers have so much, top-of-the-line talent with that starting lineup. And I guess it's, like you mentioned, if Embiid's got to bring it, Simmons has to bring that same energy. And Jimmy Butler, if he has another big game, like, I wouldn't rule out the Sixers winning, but I feel like, mentioned, Kawhi's just been on a ridiculous level, arguably the best player in the playoffs. And the Raptors, after playing so well at home last game and just kind of coming out flat tonight, I feel like they'll probably put forth a better effort. I hope we get a much closer game. I hope we don't get another blowout like we had the last couple games, but I do lean towards the Raptors as well. But it should hopefully be fun.
It's just so hard to trust on the Phillies players
right
on these game-to-game bases. Like, yep, they're a different team if Ben Simmons is making shots around the rim like he was tonight. Is Tobias Harris ever going to get going in this series?
Yeah, he's been bad.
There's even always seems to be like a trade-off where it's Jimmy Butler is going to fade off or vanish on offense for, you know, like 2.5 to 3.5 quarters, and then he'll just come back in crunch time and take over. The way the Sixers win is just so bizarre and not pretty. But if Toronto's going to continue to get dog crap from its supporting cast outside of Siakam and Leonard, that's probably a very winnable game then for Philly. I know there have been blowouts in this series, and I don't trust them, but it's been Philly's bench this series has basically outplayed Toronto's, and that's crazy. That's mind-blowing.
Yeah, and what happened to Fred VanVleet?
And like,
that's been a whole season thing, what happened. Like, yeah, he's been missing since last April.
and yeah. I mean, when it all comes down to it, and this is probably unfair, but Toronto has not given us a reason to trust them yet in a situation like this. So, I mean,
true.
I'm not saying Philly has either, because they're a very young squad, but it would be very Toronto to lose this game. But I think they finally do it.
I feel like having Kawhi, he's just been so good and just like so just awesome in general. I feel like he'll be the difference between another Raptors heartbreak and them actually making the conference finals. I agree with you there.
he's gone if they don't make it to the conference.
Oh, I would think so. Yeah, especially the way, like you said, the supporting cast, like Gasol's been hit or miss, Lowry's been hit or miss, the bench has been awful. Just like, yeah, I don't see, he might even be gone. I don't know. Just like, I don't know if he sees like a future with like, depending on what Gasol does and like Lowry's only getting older. Like, I am really curious to see what his decision will be this summer, like regardless of what happens.
The other games, Evan, we now have on tap, Portland and Denver. I think that was the one that everyone just said, this is a series everyone assumed was going to go seven. It was the hardest to predict.
Yeah.
They've given us a one way too long game in four overtimes. Tonight, Portland pulls out the 119-106 victory. They gave up a big lead in the first half, and I thought they were going to start falling apart. I was like, oh, the series feels over a little bit. But they really – Denver couldn't hit a ton of their wide-open threes, and then Dame did that, like, Dame thing. He had the one huge game in this series, but has been sort of quiet since, but he just went – nuclear for them in the second half.
And Rodney Hood, shout out to Rodney Hood. I was tweeting about him just earlier in the game. Like, he scored 16 points total in that first round series, and now he's like shooting over 60%. I think he had like a playoff in this series. I think he had a playoff career high, like 25 points off the bench, 8 of 12 shooting, 3 of 4 from three. He was a plus 21, and he's been great all series. Like I said, he's shooting like over 60%. Like, I know he's always been kind of an inconsistent player going back to his Utah days. He was obviously a disaster in Cleveland. And then he was, I think, okay in the regular season. I didn't follow him that closely after the trade. And then, like I said, complete no-show. I think earlier in the playoffs I tweeted, like, Rodney Hood, complete zero. This guy stinks. And now he's making me look like a complete fool in this series. So, like, it'll be – like the Blazers obviously need that third guy along with Dame and CJ. Rodney Hood's been stepping up. Zach Collins had a really nice game today off the bench, 14 points, 5 blocks. I'm kind of tempted to lean towards the Blazers. I feel like I kind of want to ride with Dame. I know Jokic has been absolutely awesome in these playoffs, and the Nuggets already won a game 7, so they've already kind of been through that. But I'm kind of just leaning towards Dame. I feel like Dame has just been – I feel like so determined after last year's just complete flame out against the Pelicans. And I kind of like, they're a fun — the Blazers are a fun story, the Nuggets are fun too, fun young team, but I'm just kind of feeling Dame. I guess if he just needs to get some help, and he's obviously hasn't been that great in this series until I think game 1, and like tonight he was really good, so I'm kind of leaning towards them. Even though it's on the road, they'll be a really tough game, but I don't know, it'll be a toss-up. I feel like that will probably be a close game.
Yeah, I liked about tonight's game specifically was Stotts' his flexibility to go with the guys that were working. And so, I mean, yeah, you look at the minutes played. I mean, Aminu, Harkless both had 17, 16 minutes, and he rode Zach Collins, he rode Turner, and obviously Rodney Hood's been crazy all series. But I mean, I think that if the Blazers have enough guys if the group that's playing together is working, they can make it tough. And so it's not going to be easy to do in Denver in a game 7, but I really like that Blazers team. And it's also tough because if you start thinking about the next series, there's so many different matchup implications. Like, I feel like Portland does not match up at all with the Warriors, but they match up pretty decently against the Rockets. And I think the inverse is more true for the Nuggets. And so it also depends on how, you know, what do you feel about the next series? Are you just looking to see whatever the best basketball is for next round? Or, I mean, what do you guys think? I'm curious as far as matchups for the Western Conference Finals.
I actually think that Denver's probably, like, if it's the Warriors, I'd rather see the Blazers, because I feel like Denver will just get steamrolled.
I think I agree with that.
Because their best player just doesn't have that. Like, the Damian Lillard factor, and even you look at CJ McCollum and the shots that they're able to hit, those are consistently the situations that Golden State's half-court defense, when it's engaged, is going to put you in. And Denver doesn't really – they have Jamal Murray, but he is a roller coaster ride. Yeah. And then after him, you know, you can't – like, it's Will Barton. Is that your second best really half-court shot creator? I know there's Jokic, but he's not going to face up and hit, you know, these tough off-balance looks. And then if it is Houston, I feel like I still might lean Portland. I feel like that's really disrespectful to Denver, but it could be for the same reason. If the Rockets are really going to continue to slow down the pace, though, then I think you could make an argument that Denver would be the more exciting matchup in the Western Conference Finals.
Maybe I'm just a bitter Pelicans fan, but I just remember last playoff series against the Warriors and seeing how much size that the Warriors have on the wings, and just I don't see how Portland could possibly contest. Like, they would have to play so many guys who are just together or not playable, that playable together on offense to defend the Warriors. And I know the Nuggets aren't much better suited for that than the Blazers, but I don't know. I just don't see how they can keep up with guys like Klay and KD and how big they are on the wings, you know?
I guess if KD's comes back and he's healthy, I feel like either of those teams probably have like zero chance. I know the Warriors have been kind of a mess. Six games against the Clippers. I think they're going to go 7 year, but if they win and get KD back and KD's even like close to himself, I feel like, and we've seen the Warriors beat the Blazers, like beat their ass in the playoffs. I feel like they played like two or three times in the last couple years. I can't remember. I feel like they play them like every year in the playoffs, just like the Rockets. Dame is better now, and if Rodney Hood keeps playing well, but I feel like either series might be like a 5-game series, 6 at best, anyways.
Yeah, but your point about KD is a good one, though, because we're all assuming he's back for game 1 of the Western Conference Finals, and I think that's a bad assumption. Like, I don't think that's
right.
That seems like, I don't think it's impossible, but it does seem like kind of like a long shot based on what I've been seeing about the average time missed for an injury like KD's. I mean, he could be out for a game or two in the Western Conference Finals if they make it.
This might be mega disrespectful, but if it's Warriors Nuggets in the Conference Finals, I could just see Golden State doing what they did with Steph a couple years back and over-resting him. Just sort of like, we're not going to play him again until we need him.
Yeah, maybe bring him back, like, wait for game 3 until they go on the road, think they could win. I guess they've been almost better on the road as opposed to at home these playoffs. But I could definitely see that as well. Because, yeah, I guess the point, they said he'll be reevaluated, like, next week, I think was what they put out there. And I guess we really don't know what that, like, when next week, like, what does that mean? Because I think game 1 of the Western Conference Finals is Tuesday, I believe. So, like, I feel like him coming back in game 1 might be – I feel like definitely is probably not going to happen. Maybe game 2 and maybe even game 3 is more realistic. I don't know.
Do we have time? Anyone want to stay around for some Boston Celtics?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
We need to throw it to Jason because I feel like he seems most enthusiastic about this. But that was not – as someone who just thought the Bucks winning against them was a foregone conclusion, talk about laying a dud for the Celtics. They just, the body language, their offense was just this ugly slog. I think the best way to put it is impressively horrendous over the final four games of that series.
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy because after like that first game, like everyone's like, oh, the Bucks in trouble. Like, they're not ready. They're frauds. The Celtics are finally coming together. The Celtics had won their first 5 games of the playoffs. They beat the Bucks ass in game 1 in Milwaukee. And then Milwaukee just destroyed them. The Celtics were a complete joke the rest of the way. I honestly, as much as I loathe the Celtics and just like had rivalries with their fans and like in past years and like wanted them to flame out, I did think I kept waiting for them to come together this season. I kind of did buy into it after sweeping the Pacers. I know the Pacers were a weak first round matchup without Oladipo there, but then they come in and they blow out the Bucks in that game 1. I thought, all right, this, like, I picked the Bucks in 7. I'm on fully on the Bucks bandwagon. I think they're gonna go to the finals no matter who comes out of that other series. And I wouldn't honestly be surprised, I guess, if they win it all at this point. And they've just been so good. I feel like that game 1 of that series, I think it was the Bucks just like going from the Pistons series where they like just didn't have to try at all. It was just kind of like a shock to their system when the Celtics actually played well and like played real defense, and the Bucks were just had a few days off. And the Kyrie stuff is obviously like the big story here. Like, everyone thinks Kyrie's leaving. There was the story that came out today from, I think it was Jeff Goodman, had just a bunch of tossing Kyrie under the bus. Like, there was like Cavs sources were like, oh, he's immature, like, can't coach him. Anonymous Celtics player was like, oh, you know, it's really hard to play with him because it's all about him. And then like somebody, like a Celtics staffer said something about how like he sucks the air out of the locker room. And it's like, Kyrie's stuff has been weird all year. Like, he's a weird guy. And he was terrible, all serious. Like, I don't remember his shooting percentage off the top of my head, but his shooting percentages were awful. And he had just the weird quotes after game four when he's like, oh, like, who cares, like, how I shot or whatever. He said, just There's such a weird vibe in Boston all season. And now, like, after this, like, I mean, is Kyrie going to leave? And, like, they're obviously the Anthony Davis of Mason. Like, you obviously know about the Celtics stuff with that. Like, I'm very curious to see, like, if the Celtics, if Kyrie leaves or if they don't have, if they don't have any assurances from him, like, what they're going to do about, like, trade offers for Davis. It'll be really interesting to see.
Yeah, and, like, so I thought my expectation was that Boston would have a good shot to win game one, and then I thought it would be a series that – I thought the Bucks would win, but I thought it would be a more competitive series throughout than it was. But, yeah, as that's obviously what I'm interested in regarding Anthony Davis and what happens, obviously, because is Kyrie staying? Is Kyrie going? Does that matter? I mean, the Celtics have had this plan to go trade for AD for so long. And, I mean, do they just do it and say, all right? And I mean, I think once the lottery is the first shoe to drop. And then do you just agree to the trade in principle, assuming you make the best offer in June, and just hope that that convinces Kyrie to stick around if you actually want him to stick around after what happened? So it's really the order of operations here is going to be super interesting. But yeah, I mean, I think as a, if you're a Pelicans fan rooting for the best possible outcome for the AD trade, I think you were hoping for a more competitive series here than what you got, because now there's a bunch of questions flying around. Whereas if the Celtics had lost to the Bucks in say 7 games in a good series, that's a little more enticing for Kyrie to stick around, saying, okay, let's flip a couple of these young guys for AD and we're in business. Now, I mean, that might still be the case, but it's a lot less of a convincing argument.
I mean, do you even want Boston's young guys at this point? Jason Tatum's out there doing his best Chandler Parsons impression.
Going there. I mean, I think obviously, not to go too deep into the AD trade scenarios, but apart from Zion being the number one prize, if the Knicks win the lottery, the Celtics pack still has to be up the number one up there. I mean, Tatum's 20, Jalen Brown's 22. Those guys are still, even though Tatum clearly had a step back in his sophomore year, that happens all the time. I think that's still a very enticing group altogether, but maybe it's not as enticing as it was before. And now if anything, hopefully it gives the Pels a little bit more leverage to ask for more in negotiations, but we'll see.
I didn't realize Tatum shot like 10% from three in that series. Good Lord. He was good in the first round against the Pacers, but he was really bad. And it's just like so almost tough to judge like Tatum and Brown. The whole team was just not right from the start. I feel like they just never figured out the proper roles. Like clearly they're still very enticing young players, and perhaps with more freedom and if they were like more the top guys, they would be better. I guess I don't know if you do worry about Tatum being like almost just like he was like so good as a rookie where it set up the expectations like really high. And then he had the struggles this year. He worked out with Kobe and
just keep your young players away from Kobe.
All the mid-range shots that he was chucking up, and it didn't go so well from this year, but it definitely is kind of tough to judge it. The AD trade negotiations will definitely be very interesting to watch and see how that all plays out with the free agency aspect of it as well. I'm really looking forward to it. Looking forward to this offseason. And I mean, as a Bulls fan, the Bulls were absolutely miserable to watch this season. So it's been really great to have good playoff basketball, and the offseason should be a lot more fun than my awful regular season that I had to pay attention to. It was really bad.
Do either of you really quickly have a gut feeling or think is Kyrie, everyone thinks Durant is gone. Do either of you have any strong feelings on Kyrie's future?
I feel like there's a better chance that he stays, I guess. I don't know. If they do get Anthony Davis, I mean, I guess I just don't know. It's just so hard to tell what he really wants. He just seems like such an enigma. Like after he didn't want to be with LeBron, and he like wants his own team and like get out of LeBron's shadow. And then he like gets his own team, like a really talented team. And now he flames out. There's all these rumors. Is he going to go like play with Durant in like New York somewhere? Or is you go to like Brooklyn? It's like a
that'll be the most depressing team if that's what happens. Madison Square Garden just emanates depression as it is. And if you put Cranky Pants, Kevin Durant, and Kyrie Irving in there.
Yeah, I was just thinking, it was after the Goodman article came out, I was talking briefly with Sam Lightyears. We're talking about how, like the vibe, some of the vibe with like Kyrie has kind of been similar to what it's been like with KD. And it seems like those two guys, like, I feel like they'd either be just like really, really good, maybe they're like perfect for each other, or it would just be like an absolute epic disaster, especially in New York with all the media attention there. Like it would definitely be very entertaining. Like, I would kind of love to see it, just see how they maneuver with a team like the Knicks playing at the Garden with all that crazy New York media. But I mean, I don't know. It'll be interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I still slightly lean towards him staying, but that's only because at this point, it really feels like it's New York or Boston. And I think we'll learn more as we get closer to free agency, and maybe there are other teams that are in play here. And if real contenders emerge, and they might, besides New York or Boston, I think the story might change. But as of now, I do lean slightly towards thinking he'll stay, but I think we have to let the dust settle. Everyone's really mad at him right now.
Yeah,
it seems like, and so I think
the leaks will be epic if he leaves.
That'll subside. Yeah, Carter's point yesterday was great about how like the Celtics threw Isaiah Thomas under the bus when they traded him. Can you imagine what's going to happen if Kyrie just bolts? All the dirty laundry that's going to be aired.
I mean, I guess like it should be funny. I guess like the 5-year offer, would you offer, like, if you're the Celtics, would you give him the full 5-year max at this point? I know I read some report, I think it might've been from like Mannix, who's obviously a bit of a like Celtics homer. They're like, oh, no doubt. Like we'll give Kyrie still full 5-year max deal. I mean, I feel like maybe that would entice him, but like if they don't give him that, I feel like definitely probably gone. Like I guess, would you guys give him that at this point? I guess I still might. I don't know.
I'm pretty sure I would, just because that contract's going to be movable over its entire life.
Yeah.
I mean,
it
takes him through his age 31 season, I think.
Yeah.
So I don't know if he's the guy that – you can argue that this season for the Celtics was – you know, the expectations, they were one too high, and then they were never really adjusted. And we didn't talk enough about how, you know, Gordon Hayward had to undergo another surgery in May. And Paul George even said it took him 2 years to recover from his injury. And then all of these guys, Kyrie Irving included, they're not, except for Al Horford, they're not at the point in their careers where they were made to sacrifice or be more plug and play. They're all billed. I mean, Terry Rozier maybe billed more between the ears as a star, but they're all billed as like these high end players. And they were basically all playing for their next contract. So I think you could chalk this up to an anomaly, but the fact that I think you'd be able to move Kyrie would be like, hey, let's just give him the 5-year deal. And if it doesn't pan out, we can always trade him after year one if we need to.
Yeah, I mean, it's that's the key for me, is that like the guy's a star, and he just turned 27 in March. And so you've got him through, like you said,
his prime.
His age 31 season is the 5th year. And that's like, and that's straight through your prime. So, I mean, unless there's some sort of catastrophe, I think that's a contract that you do sign up for.
Well, that'll do it for us. I am Dan Favalli. That was Mason Ginsburg and Jason Pat. We hope everyone enjoys the Game 7s that are coming up, and we will talk to you all on the next episode of Blue Wire Buckets.